Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage, from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Kerry Ring and Michael Deeb Weaver, the co-directors of Zodiac Dance Company Celebration 50 Spring Program at UB Center for the Arts. Zodiac Dance Company, UB's premier pre-professional dance company, celebrates its 50th anniversary this spring with a dynamic concert at UB Center for the Performing Arts. Now, the program will showcase a diverse range of dance styles, featuring original and restaged works by UB faculty, alumni, guest artists, and current students, and features new set, costume, lighting, and projection designs from the Theater Design and Technology program. Tickets for Zodiac Dance Company Celebration 50 Spring Program, which will be presented at UB Center for the Performing Arts February 27th through March 2nd, are available in the show notes and at ubcfa.org. In this interview, Kerry, Michael, and I speak about the origins of Zodiac Dance Company, some of the exciting pieces programmed, and how incredibly accessible dance can be for audiences. I hope you enjoy my interview with Kerry and Michael. All right, Kerry Ring and Michael Deeb Weaver, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great, yeah. Thanks for having us.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. No, it's a pleasure to speak to great artists on the podcast, so thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be here.
I'd love to start off with Kerry, and then we can go to Michael. I'm wondering, is there a story from your youth that relates to what you do now? I'd love to ask this question of artists because I think it's helpful for young people who listen to kind of maybe think about inspirations or things like that. So I always like to ask it with artists. Kerry, would you mind beginning?
I mean, I love this question because it's like making up dances in my bedroom was like a very big part of my play as a kid. And even though I did not have the training for many years, choreography was always a part of how I sort of spent time. And so this makes sense to me that choreography is a driving sort of factor in what I wanted to do. And so although I'm very happy to be teaching technique in the studios, it is always a joy for me to have a choreographic process in my life. So I would say there were a couple of bad dances made in Kenmore, New York, but that was all leading to what we now see on stage.
Fantastic. Michael, do you have an answer for the question?
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm like visualizing myself in my backyard, creating routines with my sister as well. Like, I think that's like maybe something that all dancers have in common. But what I can share is that I was a really, really shy kid. And I, you know, which is shocking now because I will talk to anyone about anything, but I was young for my age and whatever. So I dance and theater really became the place where I felt like I could express myself. And I was connected, in my junior high, it was connected to the high school, and I somehow got the courage to audition for the high school production of Grease when I was in seventh grade. I'm not really sure where that came from, but I think that like set me on a path of like realizing that if I was a little bold and went outside my comfort zone, I could kind of find a community that embraced the and enjoyed the things that I like to do. So, I think that's a great little story about like little me going out of my comfort zone.
I love that. I'm so interested to know, right, that I think early experiences in both dance and choreography are so incredible and so rich. And I feel like sort of a lot of like as an actor and then as a director myself, right, like we kind of start off as a performer and then slowly move into the kind of space of either director or choreographer. When did you sort of really feel like or maybe realize that you had arrived at sort of saying, yes, I'm a choreographer or this is the next path for me?
Yeah, I feel like I put the choreography on the back burner for many years as I was building that training. But I did realize in my undergraduate degree that the choreography classes gave me a sense of, I don't know, like new life in the art. Like I could see that my performance road was like not that it was going to end, but that it was like a shorter road and that choreography would allow me to go in the direction of directing or influencing the next generation in a different way than performance could. And definitely my time at the American Dance Festival at Duke University, I felt like I had arrived at some very clear sort of like moment that that choreography was actually a strength for me. And yeah, so that was just really, I guess, a turning point that my performance practice could actually inform my dance making.
Yeah, and for me, it kind of came through teaching before choreography. Like the idea of wanting to direct or to, you know, oversee in some way came before the desire to choreograph. I felt like I was always playing catch up as a dancer. Maybe my formative training was maybe not as technical. So I think that as like a college student, I studied dance at the University of Buffalo, and I always felt like I was playing catch up. So I was, as a young adult, I was learning a lot of like technical points and applying those to myself and figuring out what worked and what didn't work, maybe a little bit later than some other people. So that really informed my ability to kind of take in and process information and then have the ability to kind of then convey that information to other people. So I think it was a kind of a unique approach, not one that I would recommend, but I do feel like I was able to kind of trial and error on myself a little bit later than many other dancers and performers do. And so then when I was working as a dancer and an actor in New York City, I kept finding myself in the position of a swing or a dance captain or an associate or assistant choreographer, and kind of getting the opportunity and realizing that I did have a skill to kind of convey information to people, maybe in ways that were maybe a little bit more helpful or a little bit more clear than just this is the choreography, this is the blocking. So I think that is where I kind of appreciated maybe I had somewhat of a knack for teaching and for choreography. And then I was able to back that up with the great training that I had received throughout my life. So I think that answers the question, but in a roundabout way.
Oh, no, very much so. Thank you. Whoever sort of wants to can sort of answer the next one first, right? There's no necessarily an order or anything like that. But I'm wondering if you could give our listeners just a little history of the Zodiac Dance Company.
Zodiac Dance Company is the pre-professional dance company for the University of Buffalo. We are celebrating our 50th year. Zodiac is a course that that I teach and Michael co-directs with me. Students audition to get into the company, which is a year-long commitment. So a fall semester concert and a spring semester concert. And the whole push from the original director, Linda Swinnick, was to have a place where various styles of dance could be honored and showcased, as a way to not only challenge and allow the dancers to grow their individual artistry, but also to showcase a range of dances for the audience so that we could be, not sort of uplifting only certain forms of dance. So this concept of versatility is embodied in the Zodiac, which is really, she talked about the celestial bodies and this whole idea of like an array of styles so that it didn't become one thing. And that's something that we still really strive to uphold.
I was going to just chime in that Linda was really ahead of her time as an artist, as a woman in higher education, and you know, really fought for that that versatility in a time where really ballet dance and modern dance were kind of held up on a pedestal as like the only forms of dance that could be of value in higher education. And Linda was really a proponent of that versatility of experimental work, of jazz dance, of tap dance, of musical theater, of maybe some more non-traditional work. So again, she was a trailblazer and really ahead of her time.
That's fantastic. I'm so thrilled that the upcoming program has so many various styles of dance and so many incredible different offerings for the audiences that will be seeing the show. I'd love to ask, and I think this is a difficult question, right? But sometimes I like to ask difficult questions just to sort of see what the answers are in terms of like, are there elements or can you point to any elements, right? And I'm talking like across the spectrum of different sort of various styles of dance. What are the elements that really create a fantastic dance piece?
Oh my gosh, that is a tough question, Dan. Yeah, I will say that just in general, you know, you can read a book on how to choreograph, just like you can read a book on how to set a scene or write a song. But really the idea that a choreographer has a vision, has a standpoint, has a viewpoint, or has a story that they want to tell. I think that for me, that's what I look for as an audience member. And that's certainly what I try to convey as a choreographer is, you know, just kind of that that nugget, that meaning, whatever the piece is about, and then it stems from, right? So that shows up in dance in a lot of ways. It shows up sometimes in narrative. It shows sometimes in motif or a phrase that keeps, you keep coming back to. But sometimes dance is wonderful when it's just dance for dance's sake, and it's just, a thing to be observed. And there's a lot of validity to that as well. But I feel like a great dance piece kind of it comes together when everyone is on the same page, when the dancers have bought in, when the lighting designer and the costume designer and projection sound, they've all been really well informed on what the meaning of the piece is, what the process is, and that all of those aspects are kind of layered in together as opposed to something added after the fact, right? Like, as opposed to maybe a choreographer just coming in, setting a piece, the dancers learn it really quickly, the lighting designer watches one run of it, and then that's the piece, right? When everyone has that buy-in, is on the same page telling the same story, that's what makes a great dance piece for me.
I like it. I was going to just say that, the hope as a director is that every time the curtain comes down, we sort of like cleanse our palate, and the curtain goes up and we enter into a new world. And just like Michael's saying, with this buy-in over the course of a concert of two acts of dances, not everyone will love every single piece. The hope is that they will appreciate the pieces and come away with one or two that really made an impact on them. So again, it's hard to say like what makes a successful piece, because what might be successful in your eyes may not be successful in my eyes. It may not touch me the same way, but it's that buy-in of the storytelling or the dancing, dancers, designers. I have to say that our collaboration with the design technology faculty and students is exactly what elevates the storytelling or the dance making to this place where someone who may be coming into the theater for the first time, curtain goes up and they enter into this world that they could not even imagine existed. So again, it's hard to say what is a successful piece, but you kind of know it when you see it. And even if you don't love it, hopefully you can appreciate the effort that's gone into it.
Thank you. I'd love to ask a question now about process. It can kind of go, it's a free range question. It can kind of go either way, right? Maybe if you'd like to sort of tell us a little bit about maybe your individual process for choreographing for the upcoming spring program, or if there's a sort of discussion of the process of how do you kind of bring all the constellations together to create the piece, right? Either one, but I'd love for you to speak on process a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
Michael, go first.
As Carrie mentioned, it's our 50th anniversary concert. So there was a lot, I felt a lot of responsibility to bring a piece and really bring a concert that our alums could really appreciate, our current students could really learn from, and that would show that we are moving forward as a company and really working on breaking ground and kind of breaking barriers. So it meant a lot. It always means a lot to me to, as Carrie mentioned a moment ago, to really involve our design and technology students to kind of prepare our dancers for working with lighting, projection, sound, costumes, and things that'll prepare them for the professional world. What I was able to do this semester was kind of a cross between an homage and a tribute to jazz dance, a pioneer named Luigi, and also Tom Ralabate, who was a professor here for many years, who kind of piloted the jazz program for UB for a long time. And what I was able to do was take a combination, a dance phrase that he had taught for many, many years that was originally created by Luigi, and form it into a full piece. It was To Vogue by Madonna. And so that piece also, I felt really important to bring in voguing and ballroom culture. So I was able to work with one of our students, Kenny, who is from the Bronx, and bring an element that were really authentic, and then kind of uplifted that side of things, right? So it was a really unique process in that we were fusing ballroom and vintage movement with kind of contemporary movement as well. So it was a really nice and challenging opportunity to kind of uplift these two styles, kind of in the vein of what Linda was all about back in the 1970s. So that was a little bit of my process. We're in the studio for around an average of around 18 to 20 hours per piece. And then we go into the tech process. So it's an abbreviated rehearsal process, but we're able to get some really fantastic works done in that time. And that's not accounting for the many conversations with costuming, lighting, sound, projection, and all of that. So I think that maybe answers the question.
I would jump in and say every choreographic process with the Zodiac Dance Company for me is always a little different. And for my piece this semester, which is titled Fandango, is just an opportunity for me to celebrate the background that I have in flamenco dance and ballet. I attended the University of New Mexico, and they have a concentration in flamenco dance. So I was surrounded by flamenco artists. And this semester, I gave myself the opportunity to sort of celebrate this fusion of someone who was actually studying ballet in the one studio and then dabbled in flamenco in the other studio. So again, an opportunity to bring flamenco language and a little bit of culture of that to our UB students was a joy for me. I would say as the director of bringing that versatility through the process, you know, we want our students to be placed in works that are created by guest artists nationally, locally. We want them to be with faculty. We want them to be with our MFA students. We want them to be doing all different types of dance. So yeah, Michael and I have a big sort of grid that sort of makes sure that over the arc of a year that the students are able to be in a number of different pieces with different people in different styles. And so again, that the process is, I guess it's like more long-term when you sign up for a Zodiac year.
How exciting. That sounds wonderful. And it really kind of encapsulates exactly what you're talking about with sort of just different various pieces to really give people different flavors and textures in the program. I'm wondering if you could give our listeners, and I know it's impossible to kind of mention every name and every person involved, but just maybe a little bit more of a broader overview in terms of like, if they are able to attend the upcoming program, what other kinds of pieces they might see?
Yeah, I mean, we did our best in bringing in faculty. Jean Fornarola is, she'll be making a work that is really sort of in the musical theater / ballet sort of fusion genre. We have tap choreography by Terry Phillips Vaughn, who is a professor at Niagara University. MFA, Charity John from Nigeria. So she is bringing her influence of spirituality and traditional African dance to the work that she's been learning at the University of Buffalo in modern dance. So that's another fusion that's alive and sort of growing inside of our program. Michael DeWeaver has made a fantastic piece sort of bringing together Vogue movement and traditional jazz. Carrie Ring, flamenco and ballet. What else do we have, Michael?
We also have two adjunct faculty, UB creating pieces. Sam Campanelli is creating a contemporary ballet work for our students, as well as Kurt Adamitz, who's creating a piece of jazz choreography that we're really excited about. And who's our last choreographer? Carrie, why am I blanking? Is that everyone? And Mr. Tom Ralabate is choreographing our traditional Zabaos, which is a really fun and exciting conclusion, finale to the show where our dancers are featured. It's kind of like the fourth wall is broken a little bit and you know, they're seen as the company rather as the dancers in a specific piece. It also highlights our graduating seniors. They get to kind of take a solo pass, a solo bow. And you know, we get a chance to show off the dancers as individuals as well. So it is an action-packed concert, 8 pieces in a finale, and we're really excited about it.
Fantastic. If you were able to stay in the lobby, right, and sort of listen to people walking out, ideally, what would you love to hear them say as they were leaving the theater?
I like them to be wowed by the work that the dancers put in. Like, I think that, you know, of course I want them to be wowed by, this was my favorite piece, and did you see them do that? But, you know, what I love to hear is people complimenting are the stamina, the drive, the performance ability, the technique of our dancers, and really appreciating, you know, sometimes we forget as artists that people without the understanding and the training that we have think of the arts as entertainment, right? So they may not always value the work that is done in order to get to that point, whether it's conscious or not. But when people really see and can appreciate how much stamina it takes to do 3 pieces back to back and quick change and you know, and then really embody 3 different characters or something, you know, within one act, that's always what's really exciting to me. I love to hear people really, or you know, there's that moment where someone's like, oh my gosh, that brunette dancer was just so fabulous in that one piece. They pick their favorite dancer or they pick their favorite moment. And so it's really nice just to give the dancers, the performers, that shine and that kind of moment to be appreciated. So I always like that.
I would agree and say that I was just yelling about this in technique class today. Like, When families or friends see dance for the first time, they are shocked to know that dancers are athletes. And just how do they stay? How are they so strong? They take class. And I don't know if that's because it circles back to the fact that both Michael and I teach technique for many hours a day. And it is that rigor and that consistency that actually makes these dancers the athletes that they are, so that they can get through an entire show. And so it is sort of like maybe another pat on my back as their technique teacher that it's like, yes, they are athletes and artists, and it's hard to separate, you know, one from the other.
Thank you so much. In 50 years from now, the Zodiac Dance Company will celebrate its 100th anniversary celebration. What do you hope the people who are talking about it are talking about it in another 50 years?
I hope they're saying what a great job Carrie and I did. No, I think that, you know, whatever happens, you know, when we were putting together our program for 50, we were really conscious of the fact that we didn't want it to just be a retrospective. We didn't want it to just be kind of really indulgent and, you know, something just for the people who were kind of in on it, right? The alums, the faculty, things like that. We really were looking ahead to see what will push us forward toward the next 50 years. So I think 50 years from now, I really hope whoever is, you know, at the helm of this company is still pushing forward. And I, you know, I hope that they will still continue to think of programming with versatility in mind, to showcase different forms of dance, to showcase different movers, and to showcase the way that we can be in collaboration with design and technology. I think that, you know, from a technical standpoint, dance will keep evolving and growing. And I also think from a technical standpoint, projection, light, sound will continue to evolve as well. I think that for 50 years, we've really been on the forefront of that and not thinking of that those things as an afterthought, and really putting that collaboration at the forefront of what we do. And I really hope that 50 years from now, that's still happening.
Yeah, I would jump in and just say that my dream is to get dance out of maybe like the CFA and into the culture of Buffalo or Western New York. So although our home is the Center for the Arts on the UB North campus, we should not just be performing for ourselves, dancers performing for other dancers that are already interested and already in the field. Zodiac is a resource for the entire UB community, but it is also a resource for the whole Buffalo community, Western New York. So dance should really be shared by all. And so I'm just hoping that in 100 years, Zodiac is filling, you know, numerous concerts or is even going out into the community more, so that we're really able to, I guess, like expose younger dancers to what dance can be and really allow it to not be something that is for a specific group of people, or if you're not in it, you're not in it. It is for everyone. So that would be my hope for 100 years.
Fantastic. Those are my questions. And obviously I'll put all the ticket information in the article in the show notes that about the sort of that will go along with this podcast. But I always like to ask, I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners? And if the answer is no, that's cool. But I always like to leave the door open and see what may come through.
I don't know if I have anything else to say. Michael, what would you start with?
I don't know. I feel like you covered it, Dan. I really, you know, for whatever reason, dance is looked at sometimes as less accessible as some of the other performing arts. Certainly, you know, not exclusively, right? Like I think sometimes people think Shakespeare is not as accessible, right? As 9 to 5 or Legally Blonde, right? Like a you know, a big razzle dazzle musical. So I don't know. I just always like to say thank you for being willing to showcase dance. I think it's unique to have a company that is performing and is sustaining in the way that, you know, we are. And so to kind of our points that we've made, you know, into the point that Carrie just made, like making dance accessible and inviting people in is such an important thing to again make dance not seem like it's this this like monolith of like, you know, like you can't just go and take it in. I don't get it. I don't understand it. We'll try. So, I just appreciate the platform to speak about it and hopefully to invite some people in. Yeah.
One of the questions I was going to ask explicitly in the interview, but I felt like was sort of definitely covered, but I feel like since this has kind of come up, I'd love to ask it explicitly is like, let's say someone is on the fence and listening to this interview on a morning commute and they're like, oh my God, maybe that sounds like great fun, but I'm a little bit on the fence or I'm a little bit hesitant or I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking for or what I'm supposed to be experiencing. What might you say to welcome them in?
I would say that you don't have to get anything. What you sit and watch and what you feel and what you see is what you're supposed to get. There isn't something to try to figure out. You don't have to know the inside, you know, inner workings of the choreographer. You can sit there, curtain goes up, and however you're feeling at that moment, something on stage might strike you. So this false notion that the audience is supposed to figure out what a piece is something that I would really like to sort of like get rid of and just allow them the opportunity to walk away from their lives, walk away from their stresses, walk into a theater and just experience the piece in front of them and really just open themselves up to the new experience. So really it would just be the mantra might be just to, you don't need to get anything.
Yeah, the arts is not an intellectual exercise. It's like a sort of physical and emotional and sort of maybe even spiritual experience.
Yes, yes.
Totally, yeah. Totally. I would just add that I don't understand a single rule in football or tennis or baseball, but I can still, there are things to appreciate in all of it. You know, like the athleticism, the strategy, all of that stuff. So there is something to appreciate, even if you know nothing about what you're seeing. There's more than something. There are many things to appreciate.
Right.
Fantastic.
Enter in where you are.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, it sounds like you have a fantastic program planned. We're so looking forward to celebrating 50 years of Zodiac Dance Company. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was my interview with Carrie Ring and Michael Deeb Weaver. I hope you will consider attending Zodiac Dance Company's Celebration 50 Spring Program, which will be presented at UB Center for Performing Arts February 27th through March 2nd. Tickets are available in the show notes and at ubcfa.org. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.